our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I knew we were going to have an open relationship, so your podultry does not offend me.
Ron Dane is listening somewhere and is really angry.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
His brother plays basketball for the Wisconsin Badgers, by the way. So
that's the least important fact that has ever been uttered on FWFB.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
His brother was like the freshman of the year in the Big Ten.
And so he's doubling down, so...
Hey, Wisconsin people don't have a lot of, athletes from here to hold on to, so we go for it.
Especially not NFL running backs.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 130 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on the Thursday edition of the podcast is Chuck and Eli. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm excellent, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be back after missing last week with you guys. And I haven't talked to Eli in a little while. Eli, how are you?
I was just devastated that I haven't heard from you in a while. It's just good to hear your voice.
I bet you've been like just drowning in your own sorrow.
Yes.
We're gonna jump into our list of players for today. We've got a long list on some interesting guys to talk about. But before we do, I just want to remind everybody that our sponsor is officialfantasyrings.com. You can go to officialfantasyrings.com and get a ring for your leagues. Instead of getting a trophy or a belt, get a customizable ring. You can take it anywhere and show it off to whoever you like throughout the season to commemorate your win from the previous year. OfficialFantasyRings.com. Use our promo code FWFB and get 10% off at checkout. All right, let's jump into the first guy we're going to talk about. This is Tyler Glasnow. I was reported on Wednesday morning that he would be called up, and he will start on Thursday. It looks like he is officially going to be up for good in the Pittsburgh Pirates rotation. Eli, what are your thoughts on Glasnow going forward?
I think this is much like Jameson Taillon, where there probably will be an innings limit. He only pitched 109 innings last year, and he's already at 96, so you got to expect around 150, 160, so that gives him, 11 starts the rest of the way, something like that. I just think he can give you a nice shot in the arm the rest of the way, even though he's going to be limited. He's got more strikeout potential than Taillon, but I think he also has more blow-up potential as Taillon does because, let's face it, Glasnow walks a lot of guys. 52 walks and 96 innings in AAA. Like, the command isn't really there, but he can get away with it because he just doesn't give up any hits and he strikes out so many guys. So he could give you a boost in strikeouts. He might hurt you a little bit in whip if he continues to walk everybody, but... he's on a pretty good team. Pitching in the National League is always nice, like I always like to say. So I think he can give you a decent mix of wins and strikeouts without killing your ratios.
All right, Chuck, what do you think about Glasnow rest of the way?
Well, I mean, the walk rate definitely jumps off of his minor league pitching page, but also the 1.78 ERA this year, and last year he had a 2.2 ERA in AAA. When he pitched there. So it seems like there's a ton of upside. It's such an interesting pitching landscape right now because so many people have been burned by their sort of lower first tier, high second tier starters. And, you jump on these young players and you expect to get a boost. And unless you have Michael Fulmer, you haven't really gotten a boost from a young pitcher this year. Manaya was bad again last night. So there's some prospect fatigue going on here. But I really think these 10-plus strikeout per nines for Glasnow means that if your league mates are fatigued with prospects, you have to try and take a gamble here if you can, because you could make up a lot of ground in a hurry if he manages to find a little extra control.
Yeah, I think he's available in some leagues, maybe like 10-12 team mixers, because people were getting kind of tired of waiting for him. We all kind of expected him to be one of the first pitchers called up, and he's now become one of the last kind of the the crop of rookies to get called up this year. I really like Glasnow. I didn't realize he had only pitched like 100 and something innings last year, 104 innings last year, or sorry, 109 innings last year. So that is a little concerning that he's almost to that kind of that threshold and probably will only go about 150 to 160 this year. But I still think he's going to make a huge impact the rest of the way for fantasy owners. You know, National League, great park, guy strikes people out just at an elite rate. So I love Glasnow. I was high on him coming into the season. I still maintain that I would take Glasnow over over Giolito. Where are you guys at on that? Would you rather have Giolito rest of the way or Glasnow?
Oh, I think with the way that the two teams are going, I know we're not supposed to play for wins, but you know, if they were both getting the same amount of starts, I would like Giolito. But it seems like Giolito has a lot more blocking him. I mean, I think you have to take Glasnow because Glasnow's opportunity seems so much more substantial.
You like?
Yeah, I lean towards Glasnow. I think he's a little bit more polished, it seems like, in terms of experience in the minor leagues. I know he's had more innings in the upper levels, and he's got a little bit more strikeout potential and a little bit more job security in the rotation right now, it seems like. So, yeah, I think it's Glasnow, but I don't think you can go wrong with either right now.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next player. That's Addison Russell, who was named to the All-Star team this year, surprisingly, over some other worthy adversaries. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Addison Russell from a fantasy's perspective rest of the season?
Well, it's kind of mystifying. I don't know why he can't seem to get his batting average up very high. I mean, he's at .242 for a batting average again. You know, I guess if you wanted to be really positive, as young as he is, you know, he only has a .297 BABIP. And his walk rate has come up, so at least his OBP has gone up this this year. Also, obviously, there's been a power surge. You know, 5 home runs in his last 11 games. There's something to like about that. This next year, he's only going to be shortstop eligible, so that hurts. That hurts him going forward. But I think we have a tendency to give up on these young guys too soon when they struggle for a while. So I think going forward, Addison Russell is probably going to be a pretty good deal on draft days coming up.
Eli, thoughts on Addison Russell?
Oh, I love him. People forget he's only 22. I mean, Carlos Correa has, you know, been a little disappointing this year. So it's not like we've been spoiled with young shortstops that are just come up and raked from the get-go. But this is a highly touted prospect who's taken a little bit longer than maybe some others to get going, but he's starting to heat up. I mean, we're talking about a 22-year-old shortstop on pace for 20 homers, 95 RBIs. His walk rate's increased a good amount. His strikeouts have decreased a little bit. I know the steals are a little disappointing, but you know, when you're hitting in the bottom of the order with a great offense, you don't really need to run as much. He's going to... I feel like next year he's going to move up in the order, potentially score a shit ton of runs. Even if he doesn't move up in the order, there's always going to be a man on base in that lineup, so he's going to drive in a lot of runs, which he's doing this year. I just think he's a really special kid, and I think you want to get him now before it's too late.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Eli. I've been a big fan of Addison Russell. I felt like he was very much a post-hype prospect at this coming into this season. A guy that people were sleeping on a little bit in terms of his fantasy value because he didn't deliver right away. Well, he was 21, and not every 21-year-old comes up and delivers the way, you know, Carlos Correa did and some other prospects that we've been kind of spoiled with over the last few years. So, you know, he's 22 now. He's still young, still maturing. I think he will bring that average up a little bit. I don't think he's going to be hitting .242 rest of the way. And I love the power surge I've seen in the last few weeks. So I mean that's really encouraging. I think he could have a really big second half and be one of those guys we're talking about as a top, you know, 50 to 60 player next season.
Well, it's the only other red flag I really see is that he's got a 12% home run to fly ball rate. You know, the league average is 8.5%. So that seems a little odd to me, especially as his ground ball to fly ball rate has gone up. So, I mean, there's little bitty red flags, but the big overall picture is that he always batted for a good average when he was in the minors. It's just hard to imagine him growing into less than a 275 or 280 hitter. And obviously, for some reason, he's been, so far in his big league career, he's been dwelling quite a bit lower than that. So I agree with you about being optimistic. I don't know if I believe in the power surge quite as much, though.
All right. Let's move over to Danny Duffy, who's having a pretty good stretch since being put back into the rotation for Kansas City. Eli, I'm wondering, do you think this is a sustainable change, or is this just a flash in the pan?
I kind of think it's sustainable. Again, sometimes it takes the highly touted prospects a while to figure it out, especially on the pitching side, and also lefties, too, seem to take longer. And he's still only 27. He was really good last year, I think, out of the pen, and now he's kind of figured it out in the longer outings. He's not walking a lot of guys. 16 walks in 75 innings is fantastic. He's striking out more than a batter per inning. He's had 8 or more Ks in 5 of his last 6 games. I wish he got more ground balls, but it seems to be fine. It seems to be working right now. The whip is barely over 1. I do wish he had a little bit easier time going deeper into games. He's been struggling in that department, but you know, he's just kind of been put back in the rotation, so he's kind of slowly building it up. And in the last 2 starts, he's gone 8 or more innings, so that's encouraging. I just think that he pitches in a pretty good ballpark on a decent team, and he's really on the way up here. So, again, I think you got to get him now before it's too late, because I think he's going to be pretty damn good the rest of the way.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Danny Duffy the rest of the way?
Well, I'm going to avoid the opportunity to gloat, because I was kind of all over Duffy a few weeks ago already. And, you know, I was really encouraged that he pitched, you know, past the 8th inning in his last start. You know, he's always been a guy who's outperformed his FIP, and this year is his lowest FIP for a long time since he was 24. So at 3.59, you know, the whip has never been this good, so the control has just improved immensely. I think you're looking at someone who's really, really believing in his stuff, and is pitching with so much more confidence than he has. And he's really the anchor of a Kansas City Royals staff that is an absolute train wreck right now. I think you know, they have to lean on him while they can and for as much as they can. So I've been all in on Duffy for a while, and I don't see any reason to change my stance. I think he's getting better and better, and has a lot of value right now. I said he could be a top 40 starter. I think he's there right now, because the top 40 is not what it used to be.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chuck. And you know, and I was, I think, on board when you said all that, you know, about a month or so ago when we talked about him. But you know, what's really interesting to me is this is very Carlos Carrasco-esque in terms of a guy who was put into the bullpen, regained his confidence, regained his stuff, and then came out of it with higher velocity. I mean, he's throwing a 95, you know, average velocity of 95.6 on the fastball from the left-hand side. That's dangerous. I mean, that is absolutely filthy kind of stuff. And he looks great on the mound. I think, you know, as Eli said, he's gaining back strength and really starting to get stretched out a little bit longer in his innings. I think you're right. I think this is easily a top 40 starter. I would even start pushing him in towards a top 30 or top 25 rest of the way. All right, let's move on to Wilson Contreras. Chuck, you know, we've talked about him a little bit with Eli, with Matt and Mike, but we haven't really had a chance to talk to you about him in depth. What are your thoughts on Wilson Contreras?
Well, I sort of suggested that we talk about him today, kind of because we could approach him a little bit differently with me, because I picked him up in a league where I can't keep him next year, and I hit all the mines that you can possibly hit in the minefield for pitching in that league. So I'm trying to trade him for keepers for next year, and I've gotten some interesting offers, and I kind of wanted to throw them at you guys and see what you thought. I had somebody offer me AJ Pollock for him already.
I would do that in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. No brainer.
And A.J. Pollock would be $14 next year, which is which is pretty cheap. And I've had some other – I got Julio Teheran offered to me.
Meh.
You know, which I think is kind of interesting because it depends on where Teron ends up and if he actually gets traded or not. I'm getting some interesting offers for him, and I guess I wanted to look at him from that perspective as to how much you thought he was going to be worth the rest of the year, especially in a lot of leagues. He's going to start gaining outfield eligibility along with his catching ability. So, it's hard not to like what he's done, but, I mean, it's also hard not to think that he's going to slow down some, right?
I think there may be some struggles at some point, but, I mean, you have to kind of buy in right now. I mean, I think I'm selling him. I do worry about his pitch framing and about his just overall catching ability behind the plate. So I worry that, you know, once, you know, Fowler, you know, is completely back and healthy, Soler is completely back and healthy. They've got so many moving parts on that team, players who can move around, that if he's not trusted behind the plate, then he may lose some playing time. So I think right now, you know, before the All-Star break, before guys have a chance to get back healthy and back into the lineup, I would try to sell him and see what I could get. Especially if I get a guy like Pollock, you know, if I'm rebuilding and I can go out and get a Pollock, I can go out and get a Schwarber, I can go out and get, you know, someone like that, I think I would, because while I think he's talented, if his future is in the outfield, he loses a ton of value. Eli, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm a little bit higher than you, Justin. I'm not too worried about the playing time. Surprisingly, he's played 16. I think he's got 16 straight starts. I know some of those have been in left field, but the fact that they're just rolling him out there, they love this kid. And also, the framing might not be great, but he's got an absolute cannon of an arm. And in 11 games, a catcher, no one's stolen on him yet. He's caught two of the would-be base stealers, so that's encouraging. He's walking a fair amount. That's great. He's got shown some power. I know this is just his first couple weeks in the bigs, but he's 24, so he's had some time in the minors. It took him a while to kind of turn into this type of prospect, but he's been in the minors for a while, so I think he's ready. He's shown it. We talk about how there's so few catchers that can actually hit the ball these days, and the fact that this kid is like, he's a qualified left fielder, so like, you'd rule him out there in the outfield. That's the kind of hitter he is. So to have him at catcher is just such a huge blessing, especially for next year. He's already got 11 games of catcher, so I'd be stunned if he didn't get catcher eligibility for next year. So
I don't mind if people want to hold on to him and stick him at catcher. I just don't. I think the value is never going to be as great as it is right now. I mean, Fowler's on the DL. David Ross is on the DL. Soler is on the DL. Coughlin's on the DL. You know, all four of these guys are being on the DL are a reason why he's getting so much playing time. Like, that is going to stop at some point.
Well,
I'm not going to say it's going to come to a complete halt, but he's definitely going to lose at bats. And so if you're banking on this type of production rest of the way, that, you know, he may hit a rookie wall. He's probably going to lose at bats to these guys, you know, and so at some point. So I think there is. I think right now is the time to trade him if you're going to. If you're trying to bank in on the value so far, I would do it right this minute before the end of the All-Star break because I think now his value is never going to be as high, at least in my opinion. Chuck, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I was going to say real quick that I think that's fair. I don't think you can ever really go wrong selling a catcher.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my initial thought is to go along with what Eli was saying is that, you know, think about how hard it was for these players, Javi Baez and Soler, to get regular playing time when they got called up. And now all of a sudden they must really believe in Contreras, because it's not really Madden's MO to roll somebody out there right out of the minors like this. I guess he did it with Chris Bryant once Bryant got called up. But, you know, if you can make that comparison, I guess that's a good sign. You know, I'm intrigued by this whole situation because I wonder, with the status at catcher, if he's like a top five catcher next year, would you rather have Salvador Perez next year, or would you rather have Wilson Contreras?
I think
I'm rolling with Salvi.
Next year, I'm assuming Montero or Ross isn't with the team without being able to kind of just look up their contracts. So I think I might actually go Contreras.
So I mean, that's
I mean, if it looks like he's catching, like if he's got the catcher eligibility, if it looks like he's going to be catching, I think I might. But I'm not a big Sal Perez fan to begin with.
Yeah, Salvi's underappreciated, man. The guy plays like 150 games a year because the Royals are stupid, and he puts up good power numbers. Like, I know he never walks, so he certainly hurts you in OBP leagues. But the guy hits for good average, so I think he's special.
It's gonna be a curious situation to watch.
Well, let's
going
throw
forward.
Some more names at catcher for next year. I mean, obviously you're taking Posey. Obviously you're taking Lucroy over Contreras. Would you take Wilson Ramos over Contreras?
I think I would. I would still take Ramos.
Yeah, I'm taking Ramos.
He's been too good this year.
What about JT Realmuto? Because I think I'm taking Realmuto.
I think I'm taking Contreras there.
Boy, I would love to have that problem picking between the two, because I like both of those young players a lot. I would probably take Contreras because I think there's more power upside in that ballpark.
Okay, we already said Sal Perez. Wellington Castillo.
No, Contreras.
I think it's kind of got to be Contreras there. Although Castillo remains to be kind of underrated.
All right, I'll throw out three quick names. Tell me if you're taking any of them over Contreras for next season. Matt Wieters, Brian McCann, and Russell Martin.
No.
Maybe Brian McCann. If I really needed the power. I mean, the thing about McCann is, if McCann played anywhere else at this point in his career, I really don't think he'd be very good. But you know, that left-handed stroke
in right field
is just so friendly to him right now.
Yeah, but McCann's got some good pop, but is he going to have so many more homers than Contreras that the batting average difference is going to make up for it? I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe not. I think I'd still go with McCann. Just the experience and knowing, especially with him playing first base, he's going to get playing time. I just worry about, can Contreras stick by in the plate?
So. I just wonder, the Yankees, as a generality, and I know this is off topic because we kind of switched to McCann half-see here, but I just wonder what the Yankees are going to do long-term to make that offense better, because obviously relying on Beltran and Teixeira and A-Rod, that era is coming to a close. So it might be kind of interesting to see how the lineup gets retooled around McCann, too.
Well, if you ask Mike, he'd probably say that Gary Sanchez is going to hit 50 homers and cure all their problems.
Well, and I think the Yankees would like to know what they're doing, too, because I don't think they have any fucking clue either. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy on the list. That's Jay Happ, who I was, high on compared to consensus ranks coming into the season. I really liked the changes I saw that he made in Pittsburgh and brought over and was bringing over to Toronto. He's been really good this year. Is this a sign of things to come? Like, was I right, or is this still just a, the league hasn't quite caught back up to him coming back to the American League, Eli?
I hesitate to say you're right, but...
You definitely should.
Yeah, I mean, Happ's always been solid. It just seems like the last couple of years he's taken a little bit of a step up, and, a lot of people got to credit. I don't know. I mean, he's good. I prefer to pitch him on the road if I could. Toronto's not a great place to pitch. I think you kind of pick your spots a little bit with Happ, but he's pretty reliable. He does have blow-up starts from time to time, but perhaps you can avoid them by not starting him at home against good teams. Pretty good strikeouts. He's 33, so I think, at some point this is going to stop. Maybe not this year necessarily, but long-term, I'm not really buying this to sustain over a long period of time. But for now, I mean, he's pretty reliable, so he's not going to kill you.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jay Happ rest of the way?
Well, I'm a Jay Happ owner, and he's really helped me in a league where I've had a lot of pitching struggles towards the top of the people that I drafted. I really like the fact that he had 11 strikeouts in a recent start. I think he's a guy to monitor, because if he starts using this the stuff he learned from Pittsburgh and starts mixing in better strikeout rates, I think you're looking at a largely underrated commodity. His brother plays basketball for the Wisconsin Badgers, by the way. So
that's the least important fact that has ever been uttered on FWFP.
He might not even be the most talented athlete in his family. That's quite a statement. His brother was like the freshman of the year in the Big Ten.
And so he's doubling down, so.
Hey, Wisconsin people don't have a lot of, you know, athletes from here to hold on to, so we go for what we can.
Especially not NFL running backs.
Yeah, that's ugly, ugly truth.
Ron Dane is listening somewhere and really angry.
Good. Guy fucked me over in a lot of leagues. I really liked what I see seen from Hap. You know, and I like the changes that Ray Searge made. You know, in his mechanics and kind of cleaning those up. I think this is sustainable. You know, Eli's right. Like, there's certain starts that you're probably going to avoid, but I mean, for the most part, he's actually been decent at home.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, you know, there's just really been a few blow up starts. You know, one against Baltimore, one against Detroit, the one against Colorado, at Colorado last week, but most people weren't starting him there anyways. You know, so for the most part, he's been pretty good, and I think I do worry a little bit about his FIP and XFIP being quite a bit higher than his ERA, so maybe he's not as good as he's shown so far, but I do think that he's going to be a pretty usable fantasy commodity rest of the way.
Do you put any stock in him having some extra wiggle room because of how much offense he has behind him? I know Saber nerds hate to rely on win potential, but at the same time, I mean, you know, come on. I mean, Toronto is, you know, a pretty crazy offense, and it just seems like it gives him, you know, it's something that you can fall back on and say, you know, this isn't the only reason I want to draft this guy, but if he takes a little half step backwards, he has a better chance at wins than most other pitchers. You agree with that?
I think that is a fair thing to consider. It's not something I usually think about or invest in too heavily during draft season. One, because you never really know how good a team is going to be until you actually see him and get out there. I mean, we thought that Toronto was going to be like the best offense in baseball, and then they struggled for a long time early on in the season. So, you know, I mean, it's hard to predict that, and predicting pitcher wins is just a crapshoot to begin with. But I think Toronto has a pretty nice offense behind him that does offer him a little bit more win potential. They have a pretty good bullpen, so. You know, he's not going to lose a bunch of wins in that regard with the bullpen blowing up or anything. But I tend to bet more on the skills than I do on things like that.
Can Ray Searage fix Francisco Liriano, please?
I don't know if anybody can fix him. I think you know, and as much as I loved Liriano for a long time, I mean, I was a big fan of his when he originally came up from the Minnesota Twins. In their organization, I think he's done. Though I said that before too. So, you know, and then he came back and, you know, and was awesome.
Searge isn't exactly maxing out Garrett Cole's potential right now either.
Well, but Cole, you know, Cole's injured. So, yeah, and Cole's looked pretty good, you know, for the most part in his career so far.
Earlier, Justin said you can't predict pitcher wins, but you can when Chris Sale starts. Just saying.
God, just traded for him. Just traded for him in the Barf League. I got him. I had to give up George Springer, but I needed the pitching. So I hope Sale continues to win every start rest of the way.
Well, with Tim Anderson backing, he will. Segway.
Yeah. Well, great job there, Eli. That's what you call a professional in this organization or in this business. yeah, let's talk some about Tim Anderson because Eli hasn't been on in a few episodes. You know, he's missed the last two Wednesday shows.
I hosted the last week.
Well, I said last two Wednesday episodes.
Oh, Wednesday.
You know, didn't you know? You haven't done your DFS episode or didn't do your DFS episode this week because of the holiday. You know, talk about a White Sox.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what you guys think because there are some things to like and there are some things to be petrified about. You know, the 0.9% walk rate. We all knew that this was going to be a thing with him, that he was going to have to hit his way to get, you know, steals and hit for average and all that stuff. But he's striking out 31%, and we also knew that would kind of be a problem. But he's getting away with it because his BABIP is 400. Now, you guys probably think there's no way that's sustainable, but I mean, that's probably true. But at the same time, he had a 384 BABIP in AAA, a 391 BABIP in AA, a 369 BABIP in high A, and a 384 BABIP in low A. I mean, this is what this guy does. He doesn't walk, he strikes out, and anytime he puts the ball in play, he gets on. It's really crazy. The one thing that I love is the four homers, which is how much he had in 55 games in AAA. He's already got that in 24 in the majors now. But he had 49 steals last year, but this year he only had 11 in AAA and only has 2 so far in 24 games in the majors. So I'm a little worried about the steals because, you know, the power is probably going to subside the rest of the way. So for him to maintain the value, the BABIP's going to have to stay high and he's going to have to start stealing. And I'm just a little worried that both of those things are going to happen. So I'm interested to see what you guys think on
him. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Anderson Restlaway?
Boy, Eli is generally very well-versed on all the players that we're talking about, but I think that Eli could probably give us details on his diet last year compared to this year from what I'm gathering from what he said already. you know, it's so odd because you look at the profile and the first thing you have to think to yourself is that the general statement that someone would make is, when are pitchers going to stop throwing him strikes? Because he doesn't appear to be willing to take a walk at all. And then you say, well, he's got to be a really good bad ball hitter. Or somehow or another, you know, it's funny because what Eli said is that his BABIP is even better at the major league level than it was at the minor league level, which you would think it would go down some because both the quality of the defense and the quality of the pitching goes up. But, you know, even if his BABIP ends up in the, you know, 360s, which is still a high BABIP, I think he's a useful player. And the nicest thing that I will say about Tim Anderson is that it's hard for me not to think that next year he's going to be a draft value just because of the incredible value, the incredible shortstop surge throughout the entire game. You know, even guys that were marginal prospects fantasy-wise, like Marcus Semien, etc. These guys are going to be moving up draft boards because they're putting up these gaudy numbers. And a guy like Tim Anderson is someone who is a second-tier shortstop who doesn't appear like he's got a floor that's going to hurt you in any way, shape, or form. And he's got a ceiling which could be pretty nice if he proves to be such an outlier with his hitting skills.
Yeah, I'm probably in the middle of you two on Tim Anderson. I like a little bit of what I've seen. I wonder if he's going to be able to continue kind of doing what he's doing if he doesn't take walks. I mean, I guess Alcides Escobar hit on top of a lineup and never walks. So, you know, I mean, maybe there's hope that Tim Anderson can be the next Alcides Escobar.
Oh, I don't think there's any chance he gets moved out of the number one spot because Adam Eaton apparently has told the White Sox he does not like hitting there and he much prefers the two-hole. And Robin Ventura puts out shit lineups all the time. That's what he does. He gets off on it. So even if Tim Anderson shouldn't be leading off, he's going to be leading off.
Well, I'm glad your in-depth knowledge of the White Sox includes what gets Robin Ventura off.
Yes.
Hey, I'd say if Avisail Garcia is still getting at bats, he's got a ton of leeway
The sick thing is, I don't even blame Ventura on that because he's got, sadly, that's his best option right now because they're rolling out JB Shuck and Jason Coates all over the place. So what choice do they have?
But, I mean, I like Anderson. I like his profile, you know, outside of the fact that he doesn't walk very often. Or really at all, the power is a really interesting kind of addition because I didn't really think he had much power, and I didn't think much of it would translate to the major leagues. The power that he has shown, but I mean he has batted at the top of the lineup of a pretty decent lineup. You know, when they're not completely scuffling for no apparent reason, and so I think he's got a lot of win or a lot of run potential. In that lineup, and I think the stolen bases will come. Stolen bases are a matter of opportunity, not necessarily always just a matter of skill. So he's fast. He knows how to steal bases. I think he'll be fine.
One thing I was going to mention, he's just a special talent. He's only 23. He started baseball really late, and he seems to be getting better and better. I just think he's too good of an athlete not to succeed. And kind of like Chuck said, to be a value later in drafts as all the other shortstop get more attention. Because no one on the White Sox gets any love. And I'm not just complaining because I'm a White Sox fan, but Chris Sale's underrated, Quintana's underrated. Like, all these guys are underappreciated because no one gives a shit about them even in Chicago.
I'll say this. The shortstop landscape, as crazy as it's blown up this year, next year it could blow up even further because J.P. Crawford is on the way.
Arcia.
Alex Arcia, Bregman. I mean, so if at first glance, if there's a position that you haven't waited on in the past that you could conceivably wait on next year, shortstop is that kind of position for sure.
It was one of the things I mentioned at the beginning of the season is that middle infield and shortstop in particular was a lot deeper than it was going to be in years past. And so one of the reasons I didn't want to pay the price for Carlos Correa is I felt like there was enough depth at the position and that it would be getting better that it wasn't worth the gamble.
That turns out to be very prophetic. Most things you say are pathetic. That was prophetic. So nicely done.
Let's go ahead and move on over to the Kansas City bullpen. Wade Davis was placed on the DL, I believe on Tuesday. It looks like Kelvin Herrera would be the kind of obvious choice to take over as closer. Is he your guys' choice? And what do you think about him for the rest of the way?
I definitely think he's a choice. I mean, he's been pitching the eighth inning admirably for several years. He's, you know, he's part of what made the Royals so special the last couple of years. He's an excellent reliever. He's one of those guys that obviously could have closed admirably for several years now. So the fact that he's probably going to get the job now means he's going to be a top flight closer probably until Wade Davis gets back. I just seem to think – I'm always skeptical of how serious any of these injuries are before the All-Star break because it always just seems like it's kind of giving the guys a little bit of rest, and they're not really missing a lot of games. So I feel like Davis is probably going to be back as soon as he's eligible. I don't know what you guys think on that one, but even if that's the case, Herrera's a guy that even if he only gets a save or two, it's fine. Like, he's still a guy that can help your roster with ERA and whip and strikeouts. So I think you got to go get him if you got room.
What about you, Chuck? Are you buying in on Herrera? Are you buying in on Soria? Are you buying in on Hochevar? Are you not really caring because of what Eli said about Davis probably being back right after the All-Star break?
I certainly think that Davis is likely to be back. I didn't blow a bunch of fab on this situation. I also, I have a bigger question. I don't understand. Everyone says that these late-inning relievers need to have a role. Well, wouldn't telling a late-inning reliever that you're going to pitch to the heart of the lineup anytime it comes up, in the eighth or the ninth inning, to me, makes sense as a role. I don't know why that's not a role versus the eighth inning versus the ninth inning. I think all the major media outlets that I've seen seem to think that the Royals are leaning towards Soria. And so that was of my belief how this conversation was going to go. There's no doubt that Herrera is the better pitcher. Some teams are like, Herrera's been pitching in this role for so long and he does it so well. We don't want to lose him from this role. You hear that on a number of occasions as well. For the fantasy landscape, I hope it's Herrera and I hope he starts to carve out a role as the backup closer because he deserves it. And I think Soria's best days are behind him.
Yeah, Soria's best days are behind him. He's striking out batters kind of at his lowest rate, and his walk rate is up this year. And then Ned Yost did say to the media that everyone would quote unquote move up a slot with Wade Davis out, which would mean that Herrera would probably get the first crack at it. I kind of lean towards Eli though. I don't know if I really care that much. We've only got about, 7 or 8 games until the All-Star break, and then Wade Davis is back, or it looks like Wade Davis will be back. It seems like this is only going to be a minimum stay. So I'm not as worried about Wade Davis, and so, unless I'm really desperate for saves, I'm probably not picking up either of these guys, or unless I'm in a head-to-head. If I'm in a head-to-head format, and trying to get saves for the, you know, the next week and a half, then I'll probably jump on it.
Their crappy starters don't need a closer very often anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, you are hating on the Royals. I like it. So I hate them too.
Let's move over to Jake Lamb, who, at least when I wrote up this list of players, was leading, I believe, the National League in slugging percentage.
Yeah, what the hell?
Which seems crazy to me, because I feel like he's having a really underrated season this year. Eli, what are your thoughts on Jake Lamb rest of the way?
I don't know. Obviously, he's better than we thought. Is he this good? Probably not. But at the same time, we're talking about a great place to hit, and guy's doing it. So I feel like you got to kind of have to believe in it. He was a pretty highly thought of prospect. You know, he's not striking out a huge amount, and he's 149 strikeouts for a pretty good power hitter these days is actually pretty good. So he's on pace for 36 homers, 111 RBIs, 89 runs. He's hitting for a good average. Maybe that average comes down a little bit, but you don't need him to be hitting 290 to be a really valuable piece. And I feel like third base is pretty strong at the top, but there's not a huge amount of depth in terms of after the top five kind of guys. So I think Jake Lamb's a piece that you want to get right now. I think he's going to really help teams the rest of the way.
All right, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Lamb rest of the way?
This is one of those situations where I think, you know, the upside that he's showing means that, you know, you almost, if you get the opportunity to get him, if you're trying to rebuild or if you're looking to trade for potential upside in future value, I think you almost have to. And there's some red flags again. You know, 19.2% home run to fly ball ratio seems like a lot, but the rest of his numbers, the ground ball to fly ball rate, right where it used to be, you know, his BABIP is only, you know, 0.001 less than it was last year. So it's not like, you know, he's way out of line with his BABIP either. It seems like Arizona is a place where prospects either blow up into superstars or blow up into dust right before our eyes. And so, you know, Jake Lamb has taken all these really good steps. He's, you know, 25 years old. I think he's a commodity that you have to invest in if you get the chance right now.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jake Lamb. I love the compact fast swing. So I really think this is sustainable. I know you said the home run to fly ball rate is, you know, 19%, which seems like it'll come down.
It's actually 28%.
Is it really 28%?
Yeah, the home run to fly ball, 28.4%. Oh, my God.
Well, that is definitely going to come down.
Yeah. His hard hit rate is 43%. Does that lead the majors? That's insane.
I don't think it leads the majors, but I think he's got to be up there. I love Jake Lamb. Yeah, he's definitely not going to hit it 28.4% home run to fly ball rate. So
it's almost exactly quadruple what he did last year.
Yeah.
Well, I have 4.7% for last year and 19.2%. So the craziness of it is the same regardless of which site we're getting it from. I've heard other people complain about how sometimes you look up statistics and how can they be this far off from site to site. And this must be one of those situations.
Yeah.
I'm on Fangraphs as well.
I'm on Baseball Reference. Baseball Reference has 19.2% for this year and 4.7%
We had a discussion about this offline because we were finding lots of things that were different between Fangraphs and Baseball Reference. And I did talk to the guys over at Fangraphs who kind of do the stats over there, and they just said it's sometimes they're different ways of compiling the stats. So
yeah, but homer to fly ball seems like something that should never be different. Like, it's pretty pretty standard. Like, how many fly balls did you hit and how many of them went over the fence? Like,
I don't know. Well, you know what? Maybe Fangraphs takes out infield fly ball percentage.
Yeah, there's different. There is still probably some gray area.
But either way, I mean,
our point is intact. 19.2 is a high percentage. 28%
is 19.2% is around what the average is for the best power hitters in the game, and he's becoming one of the better power hitters in the game. I buy the power, and I would buy a 19% home run to fly ball rate. My question is to you guys, is where would you rank him among third basemen coming into next year? I mean, obviously we're taking Donaldson, Chris Bryant, Arenado, and probably Machado ahead of him. So you got your top four there. But are you taking Jake Lamb or Matt Carpenter?
I hate to say this because I can't. I hate the Cardinals with the intensity of a million white hot suns, but I would take Carpenter.
Me too. He's just so consistent. He's such a good hitter.
Todd Frazier.
I'd rather have Lamb.
If Frazier was stealing more bases, I'd probably lean that way. But the guy's hitting like 200. He's just selling out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's happened that his average is cratered the way it has. So I think I'm still going to go Frazier because I believe in an average rebound for him.
Yeah, I do too.
It's way closer than it should be.
Yeah.
Jake Lamb or Kyle Seager, because I think this is where it becomes interesting.
Seager is so consistent, never lets you down. If you believe in Jake Lamb at all, then you kind of have to go with Lamb because, maybe if it disappoints a little bit, what is he, Kyle Seager?
I think I'm going Lamb here.
I think you've reached a roster construction point for me. You know what you're getting out of Kyle Seager. If you need to shoot for the moon and see if a young guy takes a big step forward, I think then I don't think you can go wrong with either choice. But if you need more upside, I might take Lamb.
Yeah, because I do worry that Lamb's 292 average, with how much he strikes out, could be an issue at some point. So I think that's probably going to come down. But if it comes down, is he not just in Kyle Seager territory? And then
exactly.
Or then are we talking about, the difference between a guy who's probably going to hit 25 home runs for the season and a guy who is already on pace for almost 40? Let's go ahead and move on to Lance McCullers, who looked absolutely electric in his last start and seems to have turned it around from kind of his early season struggles once he returned from the DL. Is it time to buy in on Lance McCullers, Chuck?
Well, I think for the rest of this year, it works out kind of good that he missed time as far as not, having a lot less to worry about as far as an innings limit and what have you. But I think long term, I think the questions will still remain, about how many innings they're going to let him go to, about how deep into games he's going to pitch, because he still seems to have starts where he's selling out to strike people out. I really like him as a talent, and I like him long term. But I wonder next year yet if you're going to be able to. I still think he's going to be overvalued next year, because I think they're going to be pretty protective of him coming off of the years that he's had so far.
Eli, what are your thoughts on McCullers going forward?
Yeah, I kind of love him. I mean, he was really good last year, and he was only 21. That's impressive. You just don't see that very often. The walks are a little concerning. He's already got 30 and 53 innings, but I think that could be a product of him, coming back from injury and kind of – and like you said, he's kind of been pretty good lately, so it looks like he's fighting himself – finding his control a little bit, so that's good. So I think you can kind of dismiss the 1.57 WHIP that he has right now and kind of assume that he's going to be in the 1.2 range probably moving forward. He's getting a ton of strikeouts, like 10 an inning. I mean 10 per 9. He's a really special guy. I think you got to go get him in Dynasty, and the price is probably going to be the lowest price you're going to see on him for quite some time, I feel like. So if you can get him in a redraft league to kind of give you a second half boost, I think this is one of those guys you got to target.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more skeptical of him long-term after this season, but I also am more skeptical of pitching in general, especially because we don't know. We never really know who's going to get Tommy John, who's going to have
Justin,
problems.
Justin, who hurt you? Was it Garrett Richards?
It's been a lot of people have hurt me over the years. But Garrett Richards is the most recent guy to hurt me. Off topic, I'm putting together kind of an update of my bold predictions where I put Garrett Richards as my AL Cy Young candidate. And it's just a sad, depressing article to have to kind of do a review of halfway through the season.
Yeah, who would have known that betting against Chris Sale would have been stupid?
Yeah, right. But I love McCullers rest of this season. They need him in that rotation. So I don't think there's any chance that he's going to lose starts. I think the fact that he started the year on the DL gives him enough bullets rest of the way to kind of give you value. And I think he's actually, you know, kind of looking just at his cursory numbers, not his underlying statistics. I think he's a sneaky guy to try to go and buy low on right now. I don't, you know, maybe it should have happened a week ago, but I think you can still get him for a fairly reasonable price, whereas you won't be able to going into next year. Let's talk about Mikel Franco, who is had himself a nice week and a half, hit about, I think, 5 home runs in the last, like, 7 or 8 games. So he's looking like he's starting to turn on the power, what we thought we might see earlier in the year. Is it time to buy in on Mikel Franco, Eli?
Yeah, I've been shitting on him all year because he's been kind of letting me down. But when you look at the numbers, it's actually kind of impressive. He's on the pace for 113 strikeouts. That's really fucking good. I don't know how he's only hitting 262. I guess this, the BABIP is 274. So you got to think, with a guy that with this kind of power that doesn't strike out, the average is going to come up. So I feel like the rest of the way he's going to hit 280 with, you know, 30 homer type of power. So yeah, the lineup's not great that he's in, but it's going to be better in the coming year, especially with Crawford coming up next year and stuff. So I think he's going to give you a good amount of homers, a fair amount of RBIs. The average is going to come up. So I think this is a guy on the rise, and maybe you should try to get him now before people realize that he's starting to heat up and is a better player than maybe we thought earlier in the year.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Franco rest of the way?
I thought he was underrated going into the season. And as I'm prone to do, you know, everyone says there's no such thing as lineup protection. And then everyone says that hitting, okay, but then everyone says hitting is contagious. And who else hits on that team? I mean, you know, that's true. But he's getting protected by Cody Ashe, you know, if there is, I guess I can't say protected. But he's surrounded by players who basically don't hit. And
are you saying Ryan Howard is not good? Is that what you're saying?
I'm putting myself out there to say that. I just think that Mikel Franco, because of the Phillies, he gets grouped in with all the Phillies, and I think he's a big step better than anyone else they have that ever comes up to the dish with a bat in their hands. And I think in the future, that's going to keep his value down, which I love because I have no problem scooping him up for the next 2 or 3 years and seeing what I get out of it. That low strikeout rate in this day and age is immensely impressive.
I feel like I think a lot of what you said is true, but man, Odubel Herrera's had a really fucking good year. Maybe we should be talking about him.
We talked about him quite a bit this year.
He's incredible. He's on pace for 90 runs, 19 homers, 23 steals, and a 300 average. Like, shit.
Wow, I didn't realize he was on pace for 19 home runs.
Yeah.
Well, I know people have said that his plate discipline was really, really good to start the year and has kind of gone down the crapper since then, but I don't know if that's I haven't looked at it specifically.
He's on pace for 81 walks and 122 strikeouts. That works for me. He's got a 390 OBP right now.
Yeah. I think Herrera was one of those really underrated guys coming into the year. Franco, I don't think, was necessarily underrated because of the huge power surge we saw in spring training. His price went up quite a bit towards the end of draft seasons, especially. But I bought in, and I'm still bought in. I still believe in the talent. I agree the average is going to come up, you know, with a 274 BABIP. The lineup sucks around him, so his run scored is probably not going to be very good. But he's still, you know, on pace for almost 100 RBIs. So I got a quick question, you know, in terms of Franco. Would you rather have Franco next year, or would you rather have Jake Lamb?
Yeah, I knew that was the question.
Because I think I would rather have Franco.
Yeah, I think I would too.
And I love Jake Lamb. Obviously, I love Jake Lamb. Yeah. But I think Franco... I think Franco has got better talent.
I'm gonna bail out on this question in a way because not really to be a coward, but if you ask me who I think is going to be the better draft value next year, I think that it's going to be Franco. And maybe I'm underestimating the people that I draft against or what have you. And maybe they're going to see more of the value that Franco has. But I think Franco's getting buried under the story that the Phillies offense is so putrid.
Yeah, I guess that depends on how he does the second half. Because if he finishes strong, then I think his value shoots right back up.
Well, that's definitely possible. I mean, if I had to choose between them in the same spot in the draft, I think I would probably take Lamb just because I think Lamb, if Lamb is what he's shows us or his performance arc keeps going, I think there's more power from Lamb.
Yeah, I could see that. But I think even though it's not showing to be true at the moment, I think at the end of the day, I think Franco is probably going to have better rate stats.
Yeah, that's quite possible. It's a coin flip for me.
All right, let's move on to Brandon McCarthy, who made his season debut coming back from Tommy John. He looked pretty good. Is this something to buy in on? Because he is available in a number of even just deeper leagues. Eli?
I don't think he continues what he did in his first start.
Well, obviously, but...
Yeah, I know. And he's also incredibly injury-prone. But I do think you got to do this because he's got great control. He gives you a fair amount of strikeouts. And the most important thing is the... I'm pretty sure Justin could have ERA under 4 in LA. That is just the greatest place to pitch in baseball. It's not even close. It's not just the National League. The park is a goddamn joke. Such a great place to pitch. It's a godsend to pitchers. So I think you definitely gotta pick him up now. And you know, if he struggles, then you know it's Brandon McCarthy. You can dump him. But I do think he's got a potential to help you in just about every category the rest of the way. I do worry about how deep he can go in a game. So it might be tough for him to get quality starts and wins, but I think this is a guy that could give you a boost. It's worth a shot.
Yeah, with my shoulder and hip issues, I probably would have an ERA under 4, but that's only because I would never get it to the plate and I'd be taken out before, you know, after the first batter. I mean, yeah, there's no
way. Well, you better hope the bullpen gets him down in a double play, otherwise you're gonna
Well, that's probably true. And LA's bullpen is garbage, so I really was kind of shying away from Brandon McCarthy, and I'm in a 30 team dynasty league keeper league with contracts, and it's like 90 man rosters, so you own like pretty much everybody in minor league baseball. And someone offered me Brandon McCarthy for nothing for my team that's competing, and I'm just like, nah. Because I really don't like guys coming off of Tommy John surgery, especially right when they first come back. But I was actually really impressed with what I saw with McCarthy. And I'm actually starting to change my tune a little bit in terms of what I think of him rest of the way. Do I think he's going to be as good as we saw last week or in his last start? No, but I think he could be a viable pitcher in kind of 15-team mixers. And if he continues kind of anything close to what we saw in his first start, I think he could even be a 12-team kind of streamer kind of guy. Chuck, what are your thoughts on McCarthy the rest of the way?
I think most of my leagues have split into have and have-nots as far as pitching is concerned. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of teams that don't have much choice. I mean, you get a glimpse of someone who's coming on. Pitching is so unpredictable by its nature to begin with. I mean, you know, we thought Liriano, we talked about Francisco Liriano earlier. We thought he finally figured everything out, you know, and then this year he's terrible. You know, Edinson Volquez, I mean, up, down, up, down. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get from most pitchers to begin with. So, you know, when Brandon McCarthy starts pitching well in LA, he's a likable guy. You know, he's had stretches where he was very good, and they don't last because he doesn't stay healthy. So in this case, I think you got to run him out there as long as he's showing good signs until he starts to break down, which at an older age like this, you got to assume is sometime in the next month and a half.
All right. You know, we don't have much time left. We have two guys left on our list. Both are guys that started off the season pretty hot and have cooled down as of late and have struggled as of late. So I'm going to kind of pose the question like this. Danny Valencia and Chris Tillman, who would you rather try to buy in on right now for the rest of the season? Chuck?
Well, since I really, really despise Chris Tillman, I'm going to say Danny Valencia. I mean, I do think Danny Valencia's, nearly 360 BABIP. You know, his batting average has started to come down as of late, and I do think that's going to happen. But there's such a wide open vacuum in the middle of that Oakland lineup that he's going to be given what, deems as an opportunity for RBIs, even at a lower rate in Oakland. I would buy into Valencia before. I would buy into Tillman because I don't like Tillman pitching in his own park. I don't like him pitching in New York either for all those starts. So I'm going to buy into Valencia, not happily.
Eli, out of these two, which ones would you be willing to buy in on?
Well, my real answer is neither, but if I had to choose one, it would probably be Valencia. I know Tillman started off great. He hasn't been so hot the last 10 starts. I view him more as a – I mean, I just feel like you're better off probably using that roster spot to stream or whatever. Obviously, in really deep leagues, that's not really an option. So, I don't know. I just feel like Valencia is a guy that you play against lefties, and I know he's been hitting righties well too, which is why he's had such a good season so far. But historically, that's just not what he does. The guy's like 32. I just think it's what he's done against righties this year has been kind of an aberration. It's just not a good place to hit. The lineup's not great. So I just feel like Valencia is due for a really bad second half, especially against righties. So I guess I lean Tillman here. But
yeah, I lean Tillman as well. And it's for every reason you said about Valencia in my worry that he's going to go back to struggling against righties. It also has to do with the fact that I don't think Valencia is on the A's in a few weeks. I think he is part of the kind of mass exodus you'll see via trade from that organization. And if then he does, if Valencia does struggle at any point in his new team, he does become kind of short side platoon guy. And just how valuable is that? I think this is going to be one of the few instances ever that we'll see a hit or lose value leaving Oakland. That is going to wrap us up. Chuck, why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I am currently doing a mid-season redraft, a one-man draft, which has been very curious already. And I think we forget to look at exactly how immense the offensive numbers are individually because we're always looking at our numbers within our teams. And there's quite an offensive renaissance going on. So I will post that up on the site, and then I'm certain to get absolutely blasted because I'm to the end of the second round, and I'm already making really tough decisions, like trying to decide if Will Myers is for real, et cetera, and so forth. So it's going to be a fun little project, and I hope people will follow along and will hit me up on Twitter about their opinions thereof.
Yeah, we did a podcast kind of version of that last season, and it turned out to be like a really interesting exercise. But you had guys that had huge first halves and then completely fell off in the second half. Like we're like guys we're talking about as potential first rounders. So
I'm pretty much guaranteed that I'm going to have a very stunted relationship with Eli going forward because I have Jose Fernandez in front of Chris Sale.
No, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Nash League is a joke, so it's not because Jose's better.
Okay.
All right, Eli. Why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
All right, hold on. Let me get this straight. So Chuck's doing a one man draft by himself, and you're in a 30 team league with like 100 man rosters. Like, am I like the biggest non loser in this group? Because that's sad if that's true.
You mean with your 3-sport fantasy league?
Shut your mouth. You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and I'm looking for people to join 3-Sport. We only have about one or two spots open, so if you're looking to join the 3-Sport League and really test yourself and how good you are at overall fantasy, this is the league to do it. It's $100 to get in. Just tweet me at EliFWFB if you're interested, and I'll give you more details.
Yeah, I'm no longer interested in that league, but
yeah, I know. That's because you suck at it and you don't want to lose.
Basketball just sucks so much.
Oh, God.
You can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read whatever I'm writing for football right now at friendswithfantasybenefits.com. And you can read my baseball stuff over at Fangraphs. Except for this week, I didn't do an article for Fangraphs because I believe I've got something coming out on the Hardball Times here. Pretty soon. Hopefully it may even be up as this podcast is being released.
Yeah, just keep cheating on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, Justin.
Yeah, I know. But it was a fun experience getting to cover the Sonoma Stompers and then debuting two women. I really liked how the article, kind of the theme of the article turned out. So definitely go check that out. You can, I'll tweet it out and probably pin it to my the top of my timeline on my Twitter if you're interested in that.
Justin, you can keep you can keep sort of screwing around on the fantasy Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. You and I talked about it up front. I knew you were going to have an open relationship, so your podultry does not offend me.
Well, I appreciate that, Chuck. That's very that's very progressive of you.
Thanks.
All right, that's going to wrap us up for Chuck, Eli, and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
Oh man, it's like 93 degrees right now. So I had to I had to podcast, you know, with no fan on, no AC on, like. So I'm like sweating bullets here.
The last few weeks have been really bad, but this week has actually been really nice here.
It's been pretty mild. Pretty mild in the Midwest the last couple of weeks.
But we went through about 3 weeks of like 95 plus, and then all of a sudden this week it cooled off. But, I mean, you're in Boston, right, Eli? So, I mean, you're dealing with the humidity too?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what kills me.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, the humidity is just awful on the East Coast.
Awful enough to make you shave your beard, Justin?
Yeah. I actually had to trim my beard the other day because it just got so hot here.
Gotcha.
You know, and I sleep during the day, so it's like, you know, I wake up and my beard is like covered in sweat, and I'm like, oh, that's fucking gross.
Showing more of your face is never a good look for you, Justin.
This is very true. I really hope I'm still recording this, and I am.